verses 1 through 7. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. So as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. The time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lusts, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them in the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you. But they will give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. For the gospel has for this purpose been preached even to those who are dead, that though they are judged in the flesh as men, they may live in the spirit according to the will of God. The end of all things is near. Therefore, be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. So, it's kind of interesting. When I set out my path to go through 1st and 2nd Peter, do that kind of have a general topic that may or may not change, but I kind of set where I'm going, because otherwise I could be stuck in 1st and 2nd Peter for a really long time. Okay, so when I approached 1st and 2nd Peter, I was like, okay, here's kind of my goal. And my goal is to be done with 2nd Peter sometime in about May-ish. Okay, but I kind of, okay, this is how I'm planning on breaking it up. And then, you know, what are the breaking points? And then, you know, what do I want to hit? And so I think that my initial title for this was something along the lines of living for this life or for the next one. And the timing of that ended up being really relevant. I think most of us here know, and I'm probably safe to say online now that Davey is there, that Barb passed away this morning. Davey's sister Barb passed away, and so we definitely want to be praying for the family, praying for Davey and for his sisters and that sort of thing. Be keeping them in your prayers with the passing of Barb. And this past week on New Year's Day, many of you guys know Matt Towers. Matt Towers' grandpa, Lawrence Towers, passed away on New Year's Day as well. Some of you guys know Mark as well, so it would be Mark Towers' dad. Lawrence passed away on New Year's Day. Lawrence's health had been deteriorating somewhat, but he was in pretty decent shape for somebody who was 89 years old and, you know, walked out of the room and fell over and died. So it's interesting to me the way that we have opportunity to see how real and how prescient some of these things are, even by lived experience. It's helpful to think about some of those things, because really the question that I want us to be thinking about as we approach this passage is, are we prepared for what takes place after we take our last breath? And I want you to individualize that. Are you prepared for what takes place after you take your last breath? But then also I want us to consider that when it comes to our loved ones, when it comes to those who we have influence on in our life. Because oftentimes people have a tendency to try to avoid that question, to avoid thinking about eternity, to avoid thinking about what happens after I die. And they think that by somehow ignoring it, that it will change reality, and it will not. I was having a conversation actually at the hospital there with one of the family members of Lawrence, and they were telling me it was difficult. We couldn't get him to, up until a couple of years ago, we couldn't get him to fill out a will. They're 89 years old, guys. Like, whether we want to recognize it or not, there's a lot of people who get really squeamish talking about, thinking about their will. Well, guess what? You don't get to opt out of death because you haven't made out a will. Money's coming whether you've made out a will or not. And so we want to be prepared. And in the same way, spiritually, it's going to be my encouragement to all of us is, what are we preparing for? What are we arming ourselves with? Are we preparing ourselves for eternal life? Or is our focus still of this world? Starting with verse 1, therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. First point I want us to recognize is that even Christ had to suffer. And so if Christ had to suffer, guess what? We're going to have to suffer too. Incarnate deity had to go through suffering. Hebrews 5 and verse 8 says, although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things he suffered. So if Jesus had to suffer to learn things, we're also going to have to suffer to learn things. Okay? It would be short-sighted of us to think that we get to opt out. And although none of us really welcome suffering with excitement, that would be a little bit weird, it's the reality of that situation as well. The Lord is going to, he is going to refine us through suffering. He is going to mold us through suffering. He is going to teach us through suffering. And so it communicates as well that suffering has a purpose. Peter is adamant about suffering for what is right rather than for what is wrong. If you look a little bit later there in 1 Peter 4, excuse me, if you look at 4:15, make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer or thief or evildoer or troublesome meddler. If anyone suffers as a Christian, he is not to be ashamed, but is to glorify God in this name. Certainly, not all suffering that we endure, do we endure for the sake of being a Christian. Sometimes we have to pay the stupid tax. We suffer because we were an idiot. And because we're an idiot, we're paying the consequences of being an idiot, right? And then you learn to not be an idiot the next time, right? And you suffer because you hadn't learned that lesson previously, and now you're getting to learn that lesson. That's not suffering as a Christian. That's you thought that you really needed a brand new car instead of the car that you could afford, and now the salesman said, I would love to hook you up with a 20% interest on that loan. Okay, you're suffering. We all agree with that. But that's not suffering as a Christian. That's suffering from being naive or suffering from being selfish or suffering from having bad credit from previous decisions. There are a lot of different things that is. And that's not like the salesman didn't come in and say, oh, you're a Christian, aren't you? 20% interest. That's not the way that worked. And so we certainly experience suffering that is not limited to. Now, let's ask a question. Can we learn things through the suffering of naivete? Yeah, we better, right? One of the things that you'll learn from that is not to pay 20% interest on your next car loan, right? And there's some application there as well. Well, do sometimes we suffer from even sinful choices that we make? Absolutely. You make sinful, selfish, fleshly decisions, and there are going to be consequences to those sinful, selfish, fleshly decisions. That's true. Okay? And you can absolutely learn from those things as well. But here, this is specifically talking about suffering in the flesh, okay, so that we can cease from sin and to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. There's a deeper purpose here. There's a deeper connection to our purpose having to do with giving up what is convenient for us, giving up what is easy for us, giving up the things that are maybe gratifying to our flesh to do the things that are pleasing to God. All right? And that suffering of giving up the things, well, I think Paul said it this way, I became all things to all men so that I might by all means save some. Is there some suffering that goes along with that? Are there some calls in the middle of the night that go along with that? Are there some family time that you don't get to have that goes along with that? Are there some physical sacrifices that you're not driving as nice of a car as you could be, or you're not having as nice of a house as you could, or you're not because you're giving up those things for the sake of the kingdom? Absolutely. Absolutely. And we need to be prepared. It's what the next section is going to talk about, is how we're going to arm ourselves. But we need to be prepared to give up a whole lot more as well. Because if the first century Christians underwent persecution and even the joyful seizing of their property, what's the example that we have to follow? Why would we assume that we get to opt out of that? And so really important that we have the correct perspective. Now, one of the things that I do want us to kind of consider is, as we talk about he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. God's going to use suffering to help us to cease from sin. And we're talking about being ready for judgment. And that's the view that I think that we have a tendency to avoid, that we need to emphasize a little bit more, is that, you know what, like, you know, again, it's pretty heavy on my mind because I've had a couple of things this week, but it's like, okay, there's a lot of things that don't matter on your deathbed. Just flat don't matter. Right? And I think that we need to keep that in mind, because we can, you know, somebody here I think said it recently, you know, people over things, right? That's really important. You know, those relationships do matter at your deathbed. You know, the people who you have invested in and who have invested in you, those things matter, right? You know, where you're going next matters. Right? What you've spent your time doing matters. Okay? There are lots of things that seem in the moment to seem to matter that really aren't that important, because those things called moth and rust. Now, there's a tension in the following. There's a tension in the fact that God has called us to be good stewards of our responsibilities. Example. The one who doesn't provide for his family, what's the scripture say? I think it's in 2 Thessalonians, though it might be 1. Worse than an unbeliever. So are there things for which God has made us stewards of? Yeah. And do we know the plan of God in our lifetime? Let me be a little bit more clear. Do we know the timeline of the plan of God in our lifetime? No. So like individually, even congregationally, we kind of have to keep this tension of, we want to be as absolutely effective as we can be right now, but we also need to be planning that if the Lord doesn't come back in our lifetime, what are we setting the next generation up so that they can be as effective as they can be? Right? And so within our family environment, within ourselves individually, even congregationally, we want to be as effective at getting the gospel out now, okay? But we also want to have an understanding that, you know, we want to set up the next generation to be able to be effective should the Lord tarry as well, right? We want them to be able to have the opportunities that we've had. And so there's a tension in our responsibility. But what I want to submit to us today is that there's no tension in our priorities. There's a tension in the stewardship of our responsibility, but there shouldn't be any tension in our priority. That is, we are to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things be added to us, right? Kingdom comes first no matter what. We got to keep in mind the judgment no matter what. And so within that, godly suffering produces righteousness. My dad used to say it this way, and I appreciated the thought, is that he said, I've just been too busy to sin. There's actually something to that spiritually, is that, you know, there's kind of some, you know, there's some Midwest wisdom, if you will. You know, people think this is in the Bible. It's not. Okay. But idle hands are what? The devil's plaything, right? Well, there's something to that from the perspective of oftentimes, you know, it's kids at school are kind of interesting to watch, because sometimes kids just don't want to do their work, right? And the kids that don't want to do their work, a lot of times they're not content to just not do their work, right? They also have to disrupt their neighbor, right? Also have to be a distraction. Also have to be doing something so that everybody else can be paying attention to them too, right? But a lot of times adults are just grown-up kids, right? It's like you can't just let the people who are working do their thing, right? Oftentimes the people who aren't doing anything are also creating more work, right? And so what's the lesson for us? Well, the lesson for us is that if we're going to suffer in the flesh for the right things, the outcome is that we're going to cease from sin. The outcome is that we don't have time to sin. Additionally, arm yourselves with the same purpose. Modern literal version puts it this way: you also be arming yourselves with the same mind. Be prepared for suffering for what is right. Question for us: how are we arming ourselves? That is, how are we preparing ourselves? This is the first Lord's Day of the new year. It's a good time for goal setting. What are our goals of being armed for the same purpose? Are we spiritually prepared via reading, memorization, prayer, evangelism, service, all with a great attitude? To that end, it's really an important question, because in the chips are down moments, in those money moments, if you will, you're just reacting. And so it's your habits that carry you through. You're arming yourself right now for how you're going to respond when death knocks at your door, or when death knocks at your loved one's door. You're arming yourself for that now. You know, it's interesting to me, because in those moments, you're just reacting. And so what's happening? Your programming is taking over. When are you setting your programming? Right now. Today. And the Lord is the perfect coach, knows what we need for victory. It's one of the things that I really appreciate. I think about Hebrews chapter 12 quite a bit, is that the Lord, as our perfect coach or mentor or tutor, he knows the challenges that are going to come in our lives even before we do. And so he's able to prepare us to meet those challenges successfully. And so it behooves us to participate with him and work together with him, not against him. Oftentimes the coach knows what it takes to be successful when the players don't. So then the players have a choice. Are we going to trust that the coach knows what he's doing or not? Well, guess what, guys? Our coach knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. You know, it's interesting to me, no matter what happens, you know, I don't think we have any big Hoosier fans in here. But it's kind of interesting. You take somebody like Kurt Cignetti. He obviously knows what it takes to win, right? Did anybody on Indiana's roster have any idea about winning prior to Kurt getting there? I mean, they have the historical context of the Indiana Hoosiers football program, right? Like, it's really, It's awful. But the dude knows how to win. Good or bad, I don't know about Kurt, but he knows how to win. And guess what? He knows how to communicate to those players how to win. And so the best thing for the players, best thing for them to do is to submit to his process to become winners. Looks like they've done that, right? Well, how perfect is our coach? And he knows what we're going to need to hear, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your Lord. He knows what challenges are around the corner that we can't see yet. Those who fail to prepare to fail, as we've all heard. Okay, it's kind of interesting. Joe's going to know this story. He was actually probably closer than I was to it happening. I think it was this past year at Montana Youth Camp. Though it could have been 2 years ago, but I think it was this past year. They had a push-up contest. Okay, and push-up contest, and I think some of the boys in our fellowship did good here in Ohio. I think, you know, Thad did pretty good. Maybe Liam did pretty good. But there was one guy who blew them all away, okay? And that boy's name, I believe, was Luis. And he blew them all away. Like, they might have even had to have him stop. I don't remember exactly. But he blew all the other boys away in the number of push-ups that he did. He did like 80-some in a row and just blew everybody away. But there's a reason for that. Because Luis was planning on starting basic training soon. And Luis knew that the better shape that he could be in before he went to basic, the more that was going to pay off for him. He was preparing himself. He was armed for a purpose. Guys, sometimes I think that we forget as Christians that we're in a war. And so we're not preparing like we have even basic training to worry about. And then we get caught off guard. See, Luis knew that he had something to prepare for. He was headed off to basic training and he wanted to be ready. How much more should we be ready spiritually for what God has in store for us? We're to be living for the will of God. Our lives are now living sacrifices. We live for him. You know, Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Okay. Our bodies are living sacrifices that we offer to God as reasonable spiritual service. God's the perfect coach who knows what we need to be successful. He's preparing us for challenges and difficulty that will arise in our lives that we may not even know about today. So we're to arm ourselves today for the suffering. It will refine us to produce the righteousness to cease from sin. Again, a focus on sin only produces more sin. A focus even on righteousness actually will fall short because we're focused on the performance instead of focused on Christ. If we're focused on Christ and working with him for the preparation, we'll pass the test with flying colors. Verses 3 through 5 of 1 Peter chapter 4 goes on to talk about how the time has already passed. Okay? We need to remember that there's nothing back there for us, right? Whether it's sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries, what did those things result in? Those things resulted in destruction. Those, you know, first is lust. Lust brings forth sin. Sin brings forth death, right? But as Christians, we need to remember that it's no longer those things. They entrapped us, they killed us, they created death and destruction. And now we don't want any part in that. It's not a matter of how close can I get to that without reaping the consequences. It's now, I don't want that life. And sometimes we have the wrong perspective, even as Christians. It's like, well, what can I do and it not be sin? And that doesn't get you to where you need to go. We really want to be asking better questions. We want to be asking, okay, how can I be most effective from him, for him? You know, if there wasn't an appeal to the flesh in the moment from sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, abominable idolatries, lusts of all sorts, people wouldn't do it. But we need to remember that you can't have the fleeting moments of sin and not have the consequences that go along with those fleeting moments of sin. See, those things only last for a moment, but the consequences can affect eternity. As those who are Christ, we want to keep the final judgment in mind. There is going to be a last day for us. Jesus may come back. Might not be able to finish the sermon. Jesus might come back. I might not make it to Nashville. Jesus might come back. Or, you know, I'm headed to Nashville from here. Is there any guarantee that I make it? And that's true for all of us, wherever you're headed. There's no guarantee that you're going to make it. And so we want to keep final judgment in mind. As those who are Christ, we need to keep our effectiveness in mind. And those who are Christ need to keep the consequences of this life in mind. This last bullet point might seem a little bit oddly placed, but all of our culture is pushing the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life. And it's a lie, because they're emphasizing the passing pleasure of sin, and they don't show what happens next. They don't show the destruction in the wake. You know, my girls are kind of funny. My girls like commercials because they're a novelty to them. Like, they don't know, you know, like we've got the YouTube Premium or whatever, so that you don't have to see the commercials, right? And so, you know, and we don't hardly ever watch any live TV, but sports is the exception, right? So my girls all the time, they're like, oh man, commercial. Like, I hated commercials growing up, right? They're like, commercial, because they're such a novelty, right? And it's kind of interesting because, you know, with live sports, you're forced into commercials a little bit. And what is it that almost at every commercial, well, what's being glorified? This list right here is what's being glorified. Sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking, parties, and abominable idolatries. Yep. Almost every commercial. That's culture. That's culture. And so we got to remember that we are called out of this world, and so we should expect to be maligned. There in verse 5, there is a righteous judge. This world has been corrupted in many ways. And one of the things that suffering does is suffering reminds us that this world is not our home and that you shouldn't get too comfortable here. Okay? Because this world is corrupted. Sometimes it can be difficult to even know how to navigate within a corrupted world. Right? But no one is going to corrupt the justice of the true judge. And so are we living this life in view of eternity? The Lord has designed things to get our desire on the things that are godly and spiritual. This world is not our home. We truly are just passing through. Verse 6 there. 4 and verse 6. For the gospel for this purpose has been preached to even those who are dead, that though they are judged in the flesh as men, they may live in the spirit according to the will of God. Now, if we go to Genesis chapter 2, all the way back at the beginning, this obviously, the gospel isn't being preached to those who have stopped breathing. Okay? It doesn't do any good to preach the gospel to those who have passed out of this life into the next one. But it does do a lot of good to preach to those who are spiritually dead. Genesis chapter 2, verses 16 and 17. Excuse me. Genesis chapter 2, verses 16 and 17. The Lord God commanded the man, saying, "From any tree of the garden you may eat freely, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for the day that you eat of it, you will surely die." And they ate of the fruit, and they died. God didn't pull their leg. God didn't pull a fast one on them. They ate of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and they were separated from God. They died. God defined spiritual death for us there. We actually read Ephesians chapter 2 in Sunday school this afternoon. Okay, so we won't go back there. But Ezekiel 18:20, the soul that sins will die. Okay? The punishment of the sin of the son will be upon himself. The sin of the father will be upon himself. Very, very loose paraphrase here. Okay? But it's the soul that sins that will die. Let's go to Colossians chapter 2. See, when we make the choice to sin, we die spiritually. Colossians 2, 13 and 14. When you were dead in your transgressions and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he made you alive together with him, having forgiven us all our transgressions. Having canceled out the certificate of death, of debt, consisting of decrees against us, which was hostile to us, and he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. See, we were dead in our transgressions and the uncircumcision of our flesh. That was our condition after we made the choice to sin. We were dead. And the gospel is preached so that they might live. Right? And so there in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 6, okay, it's making it clear. The gospel has for this purpose been preached even to those who are dead, that though they are judged in the flesh as men, they may live in the spirit according to the will of God. Who is it that's going to respond to the gospel? Who is it that's going to want to be made alive? Again, that Ephesians 2 passage is super relevant. The gospel is preached so that they may look forward to eagerly to the day of judgment. So you can't psych yourself into, you can't hype yourself or psych yourself into looking forward to the day of judgment if you can't prove from the scriptures that you're going to be good to go on the day of judgment. See, the only way to have real assurance and real hope is based upon what the judge has told us ahead of time. No. And the way that we can have real confidence and real hope is to place our trust in what the judge has told us ahead of time how he's going to judge. That's why it's really important that we defend what the judge has already told us, because he's going to judge in accordance with his word. Okay? And so the gospel is preached so that we can look forward to the day of judgment, that it doesn't have to be something that we fear, but rather it is our opportunity to go home. Each one of us, if Jesus tarries, we're going to go the way of all men. But what's our perspective on that? 1 John chapter 3. We're really deciding today based upon how we arm ourselves. 1 John 3, 2 and 3. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not appeared as yet what we will be. We know that when he appears, we will be like him, because we will see him just as he is. And everyone who has this hope fixed on him does what? Purifies himself just as he is pure. See, our response to Jesus' coming soon has everything to do with arming ourselves today. Because we're not going to act outside of our character when the chips are down. We're going to act how we've prepared to act. The gospel is preached so that we might eagerly look forward to the day of judgment. The gospel is preached so that we might have true purpose in this life. You think about the people who only have this world. What is it that goes beyond themselves that they really hope to accomplish? Everything is temporary. Everything fades away. Then finally, in verse 7, the end of all things is near. Jesus is coming soon. And so when it tells us there in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 7 that the end is near, we want to pay attention. We want to be of sound judgment, sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. when we boil things down, our job is simply to be faithful. Faithful to what he's told us. Because while we have a stewardship over the responsibilities that God has given to us, from a big picture perspective, we have very little control. Control is really pretty illusory. Things change. Economic systems change. World governments change. Lots of things change. And lots of things change in ways that there's not a thing that you and I can do about it. Accidents change things. Sudden illnesses change things. And we don't have control of it. But if you're in Christ, you can talk to the one who is in control of it. You can do something that really makes a difference. You can do something that really matters. That is the purpose of prayer. And so the question really becomes is, are we going to be faithful with what the Lord has given to us? Are we going to be arming ourselves according to the same purpose for the things that really matter? Is that the choice that we're going to make today? Yeah, it's the first Lord's Day of the new year. That's great. Use it for motivation. Get a Bible reading plan. Stick to it. Pray every day. Get serious about memorization. Think about different ways that you can serve. Think about different ways that you can talk to your neighbor. Do all these things, again, for his sake, for his name, to be faithful to the one who called you. Not because you have to, but because you want to be serving the King and you want to arm yourselves for what may come. We don't know. But Coach Jesus does. And he's willing to help us get to where we need to be. See, what we do today, that's really going to be the difference of whether we can look eagerly towards the coming of the Lord or whether we shrink back in shame at his coming. Let's be those who are excited for Jesus' coming soon.